you're frightened of dying and you're holding on, you'll see devils tearing your life away. But if you've made your peace, then the devils are really angels freeing you from the earth.
Goes that alley beyond that velvet cage. Until then, here we remain with our stranging, ringing, singing ways.
WMFO Medford. Good evening, Boston. This is the What's Happening Show. We do this every Sunday night, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. And tonight in studio, we have Jody, who's joining on with us tonight. And we have Mike, the producer. Michael?
Yes, we are here. This is What's Happening. We are right at the top of the hour, 5:06. We have an in-studio guest. We have Adam Sherman right here. And let's give you a little background on Adam. Years ago, on a major label, he was on with a band called Private Lightning. And they had a hit that used to get played on WNFX and a bunch of fact. I won a radio because of you, because I knew the song. And then he was with the Souls, and that was on an independent. Now he is doing stuff with the Billy Connors Project. They have a couple CDs out, and they originally had it under another name. And that name eludes me at the moment. And then the Billy Connors Project. Do you remember that name? With
that Billy was on, this is not on.
Okay. For some reason, that your mic isn't. Jody, can you switch?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I got. Okay, no, he should be good now. Okay.
All right. Yeah, with Cadillac Heart.
That's right.
Billy's band.
Yeah.
And, yeah, a few members changed and dropped out, and Billy and Ray Fernandez kept the ball rolling and decided to just give it a name that nobody else could steal. So it's a Billy Connors Project.
Yeah. And the band has a pedigree, not only yourself with the bands that you're in, but Billy was in a band called The Boys. And they were on Live at the Rat album, which came out probably mid to late 70s, I believe.
Yes.
And you had Ray Fernandez, who basically was the drummer for the first Atlantics record out on ABC.
That's correct.
And he was the producer in the band I'm in, the Brigands. He helped, we worked at his studio over in Everett, the Butterbeat Studio, and he helped record and help produce that record. And there was some other people that were in the band, too, that had some background in the Boston area, in the bands. So today we have Adam in the studio. And we're going to talk a little about what's going on with the Billy Connors Project.
Excellent. Yeah, Billy Connors Project has been in the studio recording. We've been at Woolly Mammoth with Dave Minahan, who used to be in the Neighborhoods. And David is a great producer. We're working on an EP. We've got a couple of advanced cuts that we can play tonight. And we're really excited about releasing these, and we've got a couple of upcoming shows. We're playing at Club Bohemia, which is downstairs at Cantab, this Friday, the 9th. We should be going on about 10 o'clock, maybe a little later than that. Then we're playing at the Midway Cafe in Jamaica Plain or Roslindale, depending upon which side of the line you stand on. And that's going to be the 18th, which is a Sunday, and it's one of their infamous Sunday afternoon shows. So I think things started at like 3 o'clock or something like that. We go on, I think it's 7, but those shows are great shows. We love playing at the Midway. So come down if you have the time, and Sunday afternoon, I don't know what the excuse would possibly be. So come on out, see us, hear us, and dance with us.
Well, as people know that you're putting out a lot of great music, I got to preview it earlier today, some really great stuff. I think Jody right there has a question for you.
What was your hardest musical moment?
So, like, not music business, but music.
Whatever you want it to be.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you, getting dropped from A&M Records, Private Lightning got dropped. There's a little bit of a story there, but it sounds like a bunch of excuses. But that was a black moment because we were very young, and we thought that if you got signed to a major label, that the major label was going to be there, take care of you forever. And we were so wrong. And we found that promotional budgets are the magic factor. And that promotional budgets in a record company go to records that look like they're going to fly out of the racks by themselves. And our record was slow, and we were an unknown band. And the same week that ours was released, Joe Jackson and The Police released on A&M Records. And so the promotional budget went elsewhere. That was a black moment. So I'm gonna that's gonna be my worst musical moment. How
so
about that?
Let's get better now. What was your best musical moment now?
Best musical moment.
Best.
We played Private Lightning and the Souls played some great shows, and there were great musical moments. But this seems really corny, and if anybody from the Billy Connors Project is listening, they're gonna go, "Oh, dude," but. Auditioning, I was out of music for quite a few years, and stayed in touch with Ray Fernandez, the drummer. And when Ray got relocated to Massachusetts again, he got in touch with me and said that Cadillac Heart was reforming and they needed a guitarist. Could I play lead guitar? And I said, yeah, I can play lead guitar. And I went to the audition, and I just knew, I learned all the tunes, and they couldn't quite believe that I knew all the tunes. And it was just this moment of sort of feeling so full of myself, like I just aced that completely, and it was really a lovely moment. And so, guys, that's the truth. That nice. Night was really quite memorable to me, and it was in the recent past a really pleasant musical experience, nice. A really good one. Yeah,
very nice, very nice. If you now, I know there's probably some musical entrepreneurs out there just dying to get into the business. What would you say to them? What would you say to them? Counsel them in your best business sense, the musical business.
Wow. Get ready to work hard and have your computer skills and your social networking. Just down. You just have to. It's the people that I know that are succeeding in. You know, getting out there, getting their music heard, getting gigs, it's tough. And they are tireless. They're hustling all the time and using mostly the internet to stay very connected. And you just have to be relentless. You just have to stick with it. That's the
don't
best I can do.
Yeah. Don't get discouraged. For every 10 no's, there's always that one yes.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Well, I think you experienced a lot of things that a lot of Boston bands experienced. It was a blessing and a curse when the Cars made it.
That is true.
A lot of people got signed. There was a lot of high expectations, whether it be the Real Kids or the Nervous Eaters or
Robin Lane
or the Atlantics, and the list goes on and on and on. And the story that we hear is that they didn't know what to do with the bands. There were some that wanted them to be the next Cars, and obviously they were there themselves.
They wanted us to be the next Blondie.
Yeah.
They wanted Private Lightning to be Blondie. There was a female in the band, and they said, "Oh, this is gonna be Blondie," and we weren't Blondie, and we had no interest in being Blondie. So we didn't fit the mold of what they wanted at that moment, but but it's so it's just this business that's often run. The record industry is completely, you know, turned upside down right now, but it's run, or at least what I experienced was that there were people running it that weren't really interested in the music and didn't really know what was happening. There were a few people that were music oriented, but often things were done in a calculated way because music could be sold. So if we can come out with another Heart of Glass, and this band, you know, they can kind of suddenly go disco, and we'll be good.
Yeah.
And that's about as far as they could see. And I think this happens all the time. And I think it happened with all the bands you mentioned. They didn't really want to take the time to learn anything about those bands. They wanted something that would jump out of, again, off the racks. They just wanted things to sell by themselves. And that hurt all of those bands. All of those bands, I think, were broken up by the lure of great wealth and a solid career in music, and to be told your record didn't sell, see you later.
Yeah, to give people a little bit of reference, back in the early 70s, you know, bands like Jay Giles and Duke and the Drivers and Aerosmith and a few other bands, maybe Ready Teddy and a few other bands, Thunder Train, they had to go to New York to get their deal. They had to go down and have a premiere down in a New York club. But when the scene started happening, when the cars hit it, the A&R people were flocking up here and they were trying to sign people. But as you know, they were trying to make them into something else. They wanted, that was successful. We want you to do that. Not consideration, they're all doing great music. And it's a shame what they did, but that's I guess you would say that's the business part of the situation that didn't work out.
I think that's the music business. Mm-hmm. We want to think that originality and brilliance are going to get us someplace, and it's not always the case. Yeah.
I know in the 90s there was another upsurge of a lot of female bands, women bands that were getting signed, like Fuzzy and Belly. and Letters to Cleo and stuff like that. I'm not really sure if things had changed, if they were signed independents. They seemed to do maybe not financially better, but they seemed to have a little bit of longevity and didn't seem to blow up as quickly.
Well, I think I think the record companies got what they wanted. They wanted female fronted bands, and or bands that had multiple females in them, and I think that was what they were ready to promote at that time.
Yeah,
and it worked out for those guys. And you know, these are tremendously talented people. Throwing Muses and Belly, I mean, wow, these are incredible bands. So they deserved it, but they could just as easily have gotten lost in things if suddenly the desired thing was a male fronted synth pop thing.
Yeah.
And suddenly that's what we need. We need more of those.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, you've hung in there. I know a lot of people might have gotten bitter and maybe stepped to the side, but just, I guess, you know, as most musicians, we love making music and we love to have that opportunity.
Yes, we do.
Would you like to set up this first song we're going to hear?
Huh. Yeah, okay, so this is one of the pre-releases from the Billy Connors Project, an EP that I hope will be out within a month or two. This song is called Gone Wrong. It's one of mine. It's written from the standpoint of a character. And I think that character, I would have to say, there's an aspect of that character that is me. But this is not a particularly nice character. So this is okay. Gone wrong.
It'll all be in the biography. Here we go. Yeah, that's brand new stuff from the Billy Connors Project, and that's a song by Adam Sherman, and some great stuff there.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, Adam, we know you've had a lot of experience in the music business and whatever, but I can pretty much tell you when I wanted to be a DJ. Okay. When did you, what was your first indication that you wanted to be a musician?
Well, you know, the first thing was very young, was seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted guitar lessons immediately. So I knew then, or I don't know what I knew when I was seven, but at some point it occurred to me, this is something you love to do. And I think when I was about 17, I decided I was going to come to Boston to play music. And it was a time, I'm a New Yorker, but it was a time in New York where nothing was happening. And I believe that when I left New York, CBGBs had just started to happen. But when I left New York, it was cover bands and big hair bands, and it was a drag. And I'd heard that Boston had the Rat, and it had clubs and Jacks, the great places, Jonathan Swift's. I'd heard that there were places to gig, and that's when I really knew, oh, this is what I'm going to do. So
that's when you came here? You came here when you were 17?
Yes, I did.
That? Wow. Yeah. And you've been here ever since?
Been here ever since.
Wow, that's awesome.
Was it a shock, a difference from where you came from?
From New York?
Were you in the
city?
Well,
I mean, the shock was that I could walk across Boston in a half an hour. I mean, it was like, this is this. And we kept saying, I came up with a friend, we kept going, it's so clean here. It's so clean. Yeah, so it took us a while to break into the club scene. I mean, we didn't just walk up here and get into a club. We came up to work with a manager who had worked with the Velvet Underground, and he was supposed to do things for us, and that didn't happen. And so about a year went by before I started to get into actual gigs at clubs. But
good.
Yeah, very good.
As you know, these years you've been a musician and everything else, we know it's your passion, but what drives that passion? What makes you passionate about music?
I think that it's a desire to connect with people. I really think that it's that. You know, you can say communicate. I want to communicate. I don't know if I want to communicate. I want to connect with people. And the best connection can be made at live performances. That's my favorite part of it. Recording is interesting because you sort of do things, and if you get it right, you've really kind of caught something. You've put your soul out there, and you've managed to catch it, this audio. But once you're done, once I'm done listening for 3,000 times to that recording, it's over, you know. It is then out in the world, and it has to be received. It has to make its own way. I find it interesting. I find art interesting in general. That, you know, what do we go to a museum and we look at a painting. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. If I look at that painting and I'm moved by it, and there is a connection made, then I feel like that speaks to the creator of that, even if that creator is long gone, for instance. But there is a connection made, and that's what I think.
That's awesome.
WMFO 91.5. Boston, Medford.
There you go.
I'm not paying attention. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, Daryl's new. He's knocking the rust off. And we are at 5:28, and this is Sunday. We're here every Sunday.
That's right.
Yeah. And Daryl will have his own show pretty soon.
Thank you very much. That's right. It's going to happen in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I hope I don't make so many mistakes on my show. I'm going to do them here.
I don't know. We'll make sure all the authorities know.
Yeah. The Dance Music Express Music Hour is going to happen on Mondays at 11 a.m.
That's great. That's great. Adam, I love your stuff. As you go forward and reflect about the past, do you look for kind of a rose-colored situation, or you remember all the struggles? And a friend of mine, Billy Borgioli, told me once that when people were first starting out, the gigs were very few and far in between because original music was just starting to get a foothold. So when somebody would play the Rat on the weekend, they'd be like, you know, not happy because they wanted to be that person. Right. And they said they would stare at him and try to make him mess up and stuff. But eventually, I imagine everything kind of equaled out and everybody's getting, you know, their labels and stuff. But how do you look? Is it still rosy, or do you still remember the pain? And or do you remember some of the process of making, you know, the music?
Well, I don't know. I don't see anything rosy. So, you know, that's just me. I feel like as long as I create, and as long as I feel like I'm growing as a musician, doing things I haven't done before, stretching a little bit, I mean, that's what makes me feel like there's a future. That's what makes me feel okay.
And you probably feel there's no illusions. You know what the playing field is. You know how everything works, how it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But you can still make it happen for yourself on a certain level, whether it's just playing a live performance or getting that record out and maybe hearing it for the first time, that new song on the radio.
Yeah. Writing a song that one feels good about is an accomplishment. I mean, it just doesn't always happen. If you're a songwriter, you write songs and some are better than others. And I think that's something that keeps me positive as well, is just feeling like I have the ability to shape things by continuing to stick with my chosen art form. And if I get a song that I really, that just feels right to me, I get it right, I think that's the reward. Yeah. And and in this day and age, I don't really think there's going to be much external recognition, really. I just don't think there's going to be a lot of it. I think it's going to be whatever we can get as playing clubs and putting our stuff and doing things like, you know, doing radio interviews. I mean, really, it's hard to make a living doing this.
There's no money in music.
There's no money in music.
I've told this story probably too many times on the radio. I remember the first time I heard the band I'm in, the Bergens, and I had just left off, actually, Billy Borgioli at his apartment in the South End, and I had WMBR on. It was called The Hidden Capital. And all of a sudden, the song is playing. I go, that sounds familiar. I said, wow, that sounds familiar. And about a minute later, he goes, no, that's the band. That's what I play in. And it's like, my song is on radio that shares the same airwaves with all my heroes.
Right.
Whether they be local, you know, guys like you, the Nervous Eaters, the Real Kids, the Past, Human Sex Response, the Beatles, the Stones, the Kinks.
Right.
You know, and I'm on the airway. I don't know, it's a very special feeling.
Yeah.
Maybe not everybody feels that. Would you want to reflect on that?
I think hearing yourself on the radio is a magical experience. It just is. I mean, it's always unexpected, or 98% of the time, it's just unexpected. And when you're in the car, or you're someplace, or you're in a store or something like that, and you hear yourself, it's what I was just talking about. It's that recognition. It's that shock of, wow, you know, people care. You know? And even if that's not totally true, it feels that way.
And, you know, even, you know, we kind of grow up as a little bit of a musical community. You know, I'm someplace and all of a sudden I hear my friend band The Varmints or the, you know, the Classic Ruins or something, and go, those are my friends.
Right.
I love that stuff, you know.
Right.
Would you like to set up the next song?
Sure. Next song was written by one of Billy Connor's bandmates, Rick Caraccio, and I believe that they were bandmates in The Boys. I believe that's true.
Rick was, and he has a pretty big pedigree himself.
Yeah.
He played a long time with The Liars.
Yeah.
And I think he play with DMZ and some other bands too?
Don't know about DMZ, but yeah. I know he was in The Liars.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of great talent there. So we're going to go to, the name is?
Limousine Jean, and Billy's singing this one.
All right.
If you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving. People die that way. This is a public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Well, thank you. Before we wrap it up here, we're going to play something off the CD that came out. Was this last year, 2017?
Yeah.
And it's fourth song EP, and it's you and Billy Ray and Michael Quirk on bass. And we're going to play a song off that. You want to set that song up?
Sure. This is a song that is influenced by dealing with bureaucracy and going to federal buildings and waiting in line. That is the way it felt to me. It's called I Know My Place.
Well, thank you. Here we go. That was Billy Connors Project doing I Know My Place. Great rockin' stuff. We are very proud and happy to have had Adam in the studio today talking about his past, talking about his present with the Billy Connors Project. Brand new songs, brand new materials. And you can let us know what's going to come up and give us your dates, your videos, all your info.
We'll be playing at the Cantab downstairs at Club Bohemia this Friday. It's the 9th, Friday the 9th. We should go on about 10 o'clock. Should be a great gig. Then we're playing at the Midway Cafe in JP on the 18th, which is a Sunday, and it's an afternoon show, and it should be just a rocking show. We're playing with some great bands. And our EP should be in production this month, and should be out, ready for release in about 2 months. So sometime like May, we're probably looking at. Is there anything I'm leaving out? Oh, yeah. And I wanted to say that I give voice lessons. And I've been doing this successfully for like 10 years now, which is unbelievable. But Voice Lessons Cambridge is the name of my business. And you can look it up online and come and take a voice lesson with me. That would be fantastic. So thank you all for inviting me here.
Well, it's very, very good to have you in today. A lot of piece of little Boston history, a lot of stuff for the future. You know, as we go forward as musicians, we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but we keep trying, we keep putting out stuff, and we hope you enjoy it. Thank you again, Adam. And Daryl, what show are we listening to? Where are we?
Hold on, let me get my GPS out. This is, let's see, we're at WMFO 91.5 FM Boston. This is the What's Happening show. We do it every Sunday, 5 to 6 p.m. My name's D. In studio is Michael and DJ Jody, Adam. And we even have our engineer hiding in the corner over there, yeah. Bobby, who doesn't say much, thank God.
We're all waving to him. Yeah. We give him the big wave. If you have some local music and you'd like to, or you're even a band, international band, you'd like to be played on the show, please contact me on Facebook. I almost said MySpace. Facebook, Michael Scott Stewart. I still have my MySpace up, believe it or not.
Wow.
I had, about 10 years ago, I had 10,000 hits, and then they changed it all. They couldn't let that happen. But we're going to play a CD. We'll be back, and Daryl's going to play some stuff for us.
Excellent.
Thank you again, Adam.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yes, that's brand spanking new. Highway Chapel, their new EP, song called Darkness. Really great stuff. We thanked again, we had Adam Sherman in the studio, and I am passing it over to DJ G. There you go.
There we go. Under pressure again. Here we are, WMFO 91.5. This is the What's Happening show, and musically, we continue with James Brown. Get up off that thing.
Ow! Sing it now. Get up off of that thing.
Hey, we've got some tickets to give away today, so let's get right to it. You know, at the Berklee Popular Music Institute, they're going to have one of the bands this year is called Lux. They're a soul synth band who designed millions of their streams, and they released an EP recently through Listen for Pleasure. And this week, they released their new song called Go to Hell. So if you want to get some tickets to this, give Michael Scott Stewart your information, and he's going to pick somebody from his Facebook page. So go to Michael Scott Stewart, and that's Stewart on Facebook. Look him up on Facebook and send him your contact information, and he is going to pick someone randomly, and you will get some tickets.
And what else? We got Jody.
Oh, and we've got something else here. Why don't I pick up the other paper to take a look at that? Okay, we've got Black Violin coming in on April 7th at the Berklee Performance Center. And Black Violin is led by some classically trained string players. Will B, he's on the viola, and Kev Marcus, he's on the violin. And their unique blend of classical and hip-hop music, they play it to overcome the stereotypes while encouraging people to break down their cultural barriers. Essence has written about the duo, calling them, "The duo elicits brilliant music with a poignant message for the world." So they're somebody to definitely go and check out. And the Black Violin has collaborated professionally or performed with artists including Kanye West and Aerosmith. Their most recent album, Stereotypes, hit number one on the Billboard Classical Crossover chart and number four on Billboard's charts.
Well, thank you again. We want to thank you today for listening to What's Happening. I'm Mike Stewart. Aaron is on assignment. He will hopefully be back next week.
My name's Dee.
I'm Jody.
And I'm Adam.
Thank you for tuning in today. We'll be back next Sunday at 5 o'clock, and Daryl's going to be taking us out. Here you go, Daryl.
It's not fun.